Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 7th edition of the Triple Wing Hammer Report. I want to thank all of you for taking the time out on this busy holiday weekend to schedule to join us, and I hope that you have a rip-roaring good time tonight. Tonight we have one of the best ever been, and we're going to get to him as soon as we possibly can, but as soon as we get through our announcements, we'll get right to Rick. The reason why we do this is to try to get as many ideas as we can about wing teams, and either be a single, double, or the wing tee. I think that they all kind of marry together. They have similar philosophies and everything, and I think that any team that runs a wing is a lethal team. Defense just can't deal for them if it's done right. A couple of announcements. The National Single Wing Coach Association symposium is coming up here on June 26th through the 28th in Dumfries, Virginia. You need to go ahead and make your plans to attend it. I tell you, it's going to be a good ripping time. We got Travis Connors, Derek Miner, Mickey Thompson, Sean O, Corey Parker, who will be speaking. And, of course, we got Ed Raceley and George Mikovic, two legends in this in the single wing business, who will be on a panel talking about single wing history. And I think that's about all you can call it, because these guys have seen the best and they've seen them all. The cost is $25 per coach if you come by yourself, but if you bring your staff with you, it is a grand total of $50. And you can't beat that no matter where you go. The Single Wing Conclave this coming February will be in, this coming March, specifically March 6th and 7th, will be in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And Todd Ross, again, is organizing that. And as soon as you get the details out about speakers and everything, he'll get that information posted. And again, we'll be posting it as soon as we get it. I'm talking about it every day and trying to get you guys to get that fever. It's amazing that the guys who are very successful in this business, they go to these things no matter how big they are. They be there. And those guys, they have the pencils and pen out, taking notes no matter who's speaking, everything, just getting ideas and getting good at what they do. So, hit your your wagon to one of these stars and do as they do, as I tell the guys. Just do what they tell you to do. No new books to report this week, but for anybody new, I'll get those books out to you again. Great books to read. Again, we're about building relationships, and I tell you, these things have helped me on in this new assignment and everything. And you know, it's just a great thing to see your kids come together and getting to trust you and trust as one through relationship building. And it's not about X's and O's. You know, the kids will bust down the door for you if they believe in you, and if they know that you got their back. Book number one, Win Forever, Win, Work, and Play Like a Champion by Pete Carroll. The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews. Season of Light by Jeffrey Marks. Inside Eye Coaching by Joe Ehrman. And Good to Great by Jim Collins. I would suggest you read those books over the summer, because it can help you out a whole lot. A lot of us got the X's and O's down, but somehow, you know, it's that missing link that's taking us from going to the next level, and that is so important. If you have a suggestion for a coach that you want us to interview on the show, let me know, and we'll make contact with that coaching guy. We'll book him. You know, there's, as I tell everybody, there's nobody is too small to get on here and talk about this program. We want to hear about all those great programs out there. And if you know someone that is doing great, you know, I'll contact him and I'll sit down and talk to him and I'll get him booked and give him an opportunity to tell his story. We don't have any, didn't get any emails today about guys who are doing some great things out there. And so if you know somebody that's doing some great things, hook me up with an email, get it to me, and then I'll make big hay about it, because again, if we don't beat our own chest, nobody's going to beat it for us. People have a tendency to beat us down, and sometimes when people are beating us down, we got to go up there and we got to do a better job of telling our story instead of letting people define us. Tonight we have Rick Darlington from Parker High School. I've known Rick, first time I met Rick, and I'll make mention this later, I met Rick about 7-8 years ago. I don't know if he remembered. And it was at a clinic, and from there, he just impressed me. Matter of fact, I was in awe of him when I first met him, and we'll talk about that later on tonight. But I can't think of a guy who's done a better job, no matter where he's coached at. And we're gonna let him tell the story how he did it. I hope you learned something from Rick and everything. And let's see if we can get Rick online right now. I'm gonna let him tell the story to you instead of me trying to do it here, and see if we can get something going there. Rick, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Hey, my man. What's going on? How's everything going on there in Florida?
It's going good. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing fine. If I were doing any better, I'll start screaming right now. I know it's a little warm and everything down there. It's hot, about 95 degrees again today, and it is smoking outside. I stayed in most of the day. Didn't want to get out there in that heat and everything. Before we get started, Rick, I want to ask you a question. To clear
right.
the air on everything. Did Will Muncheff from the University of Florida ever call you, give you a call about the offensive coordinator position?
No.
And doing the research from you, one of the sports writers was, boy, he was hot and bothered under the sun. The man wouldn't even call you to offer you the offensive coordinator job. So I just wanted to know if you got that telephone call or not.
No, still waiting for that one, but don't think it's coming.
Rick, for people who for the last 10 years have had their heads in a hole, could you tell the coaches out there who don't know you, could you tell people who you are, what you are, and what you're all about?
That's kind of an open-ended question.
I'm the
football coach at Apopka High School, which is in Central Florida, about 15 miles northwest of Orlando. And I've got a wife named Shelley, and we've been married for 23 years. We have 7 children. My oldest is Ty. He plays center for the University of Oklahoma. My second is Zach. He's a quarterback, a freshman at the University of Nebraska. Then I've got two high school daughters, Molly and Gracie. And then I've got a middle school son named Jackson, and then two smaller kids who are 9 and 7, and Wyatt and Lily. So we got a full house all the way from 21 down to, so we're very blessed. And I coach at a high school where, you know, we've had a little bit of success, and I've got a phenomenal coaching staff of godly men who invest in the lives of our young people, and we've had some good teams. But, you know, more than the success we've had on the field, we've had great success in building men, and that's what we're most, you know, thankful of and blessed by.
I'm going to get into some of those things, specifically how you do that. But let me start off with this. You know, since this is starting to get a lot of attention right now, I don't know if you know it or not, but the president is having a meeting with the select groups in the near future to talk about the safety of players, mainly concussions. And you and your family had firsthand experience with this with your son, Zach. First thing, how's Zach doing now?
Zach's good. He's here with us right now for about another week. He's, you know, he finished up his first semester in Nebraska. He was an early enrollee. So we went through spring practice in March, and he's home now for about 3 weeks, and he'll officially graduate from high school next week, and then he'll go back to Nebraska in early June. So he's doing great.
That's fantastic. How did this episode last year, how did it affect your family going forward, and what effect did it, is something like that have, you know, going forward with your team, this concussion thing? How did you handle it, and how are you going to handle it going forward?
Well, the thing that people don't know is, you know, they saw Zach get hit on national TV and got injured and airlifted out and all that. And, you know, I wasn't that nervous that day, as people would have thought. He got another concussion in June. We were training in, you know, our off-season program, and he was flipping a tire in a race, and another tire hit him on the back of the head. And, you know, as scary as the one was in August on TV, this one was a whole lot worse and a lot more scary. And I was at that point really thinking I might lose him. And I was with him in the hospital, and, you know, I was very thankful that God, you know, let him, you know, recover. And, you know, he came back and, you know, spent the summer trying to get back to normal, and, you know, didn't do much lifting or running, you know, did a little bit of throwing, but, you know, really tried to get healed. And then we got back in there against Burns, and, you know, it was probably just too soon. You know, it was 2 months from the other concussion. And when he got hit, it wasn't a, you know, particularly vicious hit or a dirty hit. It was just, it just hit him, I guess, in the wrong way at the wrong time. And so I knew what was going on the whole time, and I had confidence that he'd be fine. But it was scary, and, you know, we made that decision after that to send him out his senior year, which was, you know, really tough for him, obviously, because, you know, he led us to a state championship as a junior and had committed to Nebraska. And it was great the way that Coach Pelini stepped up and said, regardless of whether he ever plays football again, we want him to be a Cornhusker, and he's got a scholarship here no matter what. So that was awesome about Nebraska doing that. That's what they're about. They've always been first class, all the way back to, you know, Coach Devaney and Coach Osborne. And so, you know, it was hard because Zach would practice with us every day. He'd run scout spot quarterback, and I'd even give him some reps with the ones, and he just never got, you know, hit in practice. And, you know, so Monday through Thursday, I had Zach as a player, you know, and he was a team leader still and, you know, a great motivator to the other kids. But then on Friday night, you know, he was kind of on the sideline more as an assistant coach, I guess you'd say. And so that was hard for me, you know, as a dad. It was hard for our family. And, you know, it was just weird. You know, our team changed, you know, when you don't have your trigger man. And, you know, then the next week we lost our top receiver and our top tailback to injuries for the year. And so we literally changed speeds and went straight old school single wing, and, you know, ended up setting a state of Florida scoring record. You know, we averaged 53 points per game in the regular season and 50 points per game throughout the total year. And we set a state rushing record, and then we ended up going back to the state finals, and we unfortunately didn't get it done. We lost the finals. But, you know, we've been to back-to-back state games, which is pretty special. But so it was hard for me not to have Zach with me on Friday nights, you know, making plays like he'd done. But, you know, I believe that God's going to bless him. He's going to do it again at Nebraska. Now, as far as the future and this and that, you know, we got great trainers at our school. And when we have a guy that has concussion symptoms, they check him out. They've got a series of tests they do with him. And we don't bring him back soon at all. You know, as a coach, you get frustrated because, you know, you want a guy to get right back in. And, you know, with our guys, there's a period that they have to go through and all the symptoms go away and they have to come back non-contact and then full contact. So we are very cautious with that, which is what we need to do because it can be, you know, life-changing, you know. And, you know, when I was growing up and playing Leonard, and I'm sure you were too, you know, we didn't know much about concussions. It was more like, well, he got his bell rung.
Mm-hmm.
And now with all the research and all the technology, you know, there's a lot more knowledge about concussions and other type of injuries of that sort. So we've got to definitely err on the side of caution with guys. And so it's definitely hit close to home with us. But, you know, I know that God's got a plan for Zach. And right now it looks like it includes football at Nebraska. But if it doesn't, that's okay too. You know, God's got plans for him that are bigger than football. You know, that's to help impact the lives of young men and other people. So we're very thankful he's going to be okay and looking forward to seeing him play at Nebraska.
Now, I didn't realize he was an early enrollee. Did he participate in spring practice?
He did.
Okay, and he went and he did well.
Well, he's a freshman.
I do. Well, I mean, he survived and everything. I mean, he did okay.
Oh, yeah, he didn't. You know, yeah, he's fine.
Okay, good. Okay, I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know he was an early enrollee. That's great.
Yeah, he's already enrolled. He's already got a semester under his belt.
Yeah, well, that's good. That is great. You mentioned Bo Pelini. You know, I was reading this, and I didn't know Bo did this. You want to talk more about what Bo did for you and your family, you know, around Zach and everything?
Well, he just said he just, you know, we talked to him in the hospital in South Carolina after the event happened, and he just said not to worry, that no matter what, you know, Zach had a place in Nebraska, which was awesome, you know, because a lot of schools might drop him, you know, move on to the next guy, whatever. You know, I mean, just like a broken leg or something your senior year, the scholarship may go away. But Nebraska wasn't like that, and I was very thankful, you know. And then Zach had been chosen to play in the Semper Fi All-American game in California. He got to go do that, and he didn't play in the game, but he got to go out there and be a part and practice. And the thing I've been so proud of with both of my sons, I've got an older son, as I said, went to Oklahoma. He played the Army game. And both of my sons were awarded at the game their team's leadership award. Got that award. It's called the Link in the Chain Award when he was in San Antonio in 2012. And then last year, Zach, even though he didn't get to play in the game, the coaches and the staff at the Semper Fi game chose him the Service and Leadership Award. So, you know, for a dad to have two sons and get to be All-Americans, but then to get to win that award at the game, that's even better than being an All-American in itself. So I've been real proud of them and the character they've shown. And I can tell you that's 100% their mother.
So, I was about to ask that. Shoot, they must got all that from mama, because
exactly.
You know, from what I know about you, and learn about you, it didn't come from you at all. Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm glad for both of them because they are special people, and I believe you got two more sons who are coming up, right?
We do. We got two more sons and three more daughters, so a lot of Darlington still ahead.
Okay, that's great, man. That is super. What is your offensive philosophy? Because I know you've done a lot of things in the past. You want to share with the listeners what your philosophy is as far as offense is concerned?
You know, I don't know if I have one. I certainly don't have one written down or anything. I'm not that type of a guy, but I know we're going to run the ball. You know, we've always run the ball about 80% of the time, and, you know, we've run the ball. We started off when I first started coaching, I ran the wing tee, you know, and then that kind of moved into like a wing bone type thing where we ran triple option with it. And then I ran some option out of the spread when I was in Georgia and then came back to Apopka and discovered the single wing and went with that. But whatever we've done, we've always run the ball well. And, you know, we don't really have the philosophy of spreading it around to certain guys or getting guys touches. That's not really been my thing. I've always been the kind of guy that we're going to do what it takes to win. And you know, if that means running off tackle 45 times a night, then that's what we're going to do. And that's kind of how our program is built on selfishness and toughness. And so those are the things that we do. You know, we had two guys last year. We moved over and played them both ways. We never play both ways, guys. And we played a free safety at tailback out of injuries, and he rushed for 2,400 yards and scored 33 touchdowns and was the state player of the year. And then we had a wingback that we moved over and played both ways, and he scored 25 touchdowns and averaged 12 yards a carry. You know, but there's not a lot of passing going on in there. And when we do pass, we're trying to score a touchdown. We're not trying to throw a hitch for 6 yards when we can run the ball and average about 9 or 10. So so that's kind of our thing. Run the ball, play great defense, and that usually we'll win more games than we lose.
You stumble upon the single wing, or why do you run the single? Why did you run the single wing? Or what is it about you in the single wing?
Well, after the 2006 season, we did not have a quarterback coming back in our program. And back then we were running like wing bone, flex bone, triple option, and did not have a quarterback at all. And so someone jokingly told, hey, you ought to run the single wing. They don't have a quarterback. And I'm embarrassed to admit, I didn't even know what the single wing was. You know, we'd run wing T, but I'd never heard of the single wing. And so, you know, like every other good American, I guess I Googled it and looked up the single wing and started looking up, you know, some facts on it, and then found that Delphi forum, you know, the single wing website, and got on there and just started kind of listening and reading what guys were saying. And, you know, if there was a video clip, I'd grab a hold of it and look at it. About that same time, I saw Menominee High School in Michigan play on TV. They were playing on Fox Sports Detroit for the state championship in 2006. And I remember watching their coach, you know, Ken Hofer. He looked like, you know, a cross between Abraham Lincoln and some Amish man with that beard he's got and stuff. And watching them, and I mean, they had the worst uniforms I've ever seen. They had these long sleeves and no decals and striped socks, and it's like, good God, if I put those uniforms on my kid, they might freaking quit. But this team, they just dismantled some other team from Michigan and won the state championship, and won it the next year too. And so I think that is a cool offense. I mean, like, man, no one in Florida would run that offense. And so if I do this thing, it ain't like a bunch of people are going to follow, because it's so different than the spread, you know, that you see so much in Florida and Texas and California. And so I went up to that single wing conclave, as you said, in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And that was an eye opener there. You know, it was like a football frat party. You know, everyone's just hanging out. Everyone's really friendly. And I remember going up to this table, Leonard, and there were all these DVDs up there, and I go, are these for sale? Can I buy these DVDs? And some guy goes, no, just take what you want. I'm like, take what I want. You know, it's like, I was like, I'm in a candy store or something. You know, take what you want. And I took film from wherever I could find it. And I went back and I watched it all. And we kind of made up our own system, you know, of the things we knew in the background with our you know, wing T past and watching film. And, you know, people say, well, who's your biggest influence in single wing? Well, there have been so many. I mean, I watched film on Conway Springs, Kansas, and Stonebridge, Virginia, and then film from Osborne, and then film from, you know, Menominee. And there was just so many different people. You know, and here's the thing. There's not that many people that run it. And so you could kind of find out the high school coaches that run it pretty quick and then kind of try to bootleg some film on them. And so we kind of made up a system and ran it. And my first year running it, we about threw it out the window, because the first game we ran it was a practice game. But, Leonard, in a half, we lost 42-0 in a half. And I go, forget this stuff. I mean, we had like 14 fumbles. And I go, forget this. We're going back to what we did before. But, you know, we stuck with it. We ended up going 12-2 that year, went to the state semifinals. And so we got it rolling with it, and, you know, we've been running it ever since. You know, so we kind of discovered it just by necessity of not having a quarterback and having to figure out a way to move the ball.
But one of the biggest impacts is that you went to that conclave and you got all the information that you needed, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I preach all the time on here. I hate to use the word preach, but the guys need to get to those. They need to get to what I call events, because you learn so much from those events, you know, and I know you all over the place now with this stuff, because people, you know, people want to talk to you about it. But any young coach out there, they need to get to these events, because the guys will give you the shirt off their back. They don't mind giving. I can tell you that right now.
Well, the thing about that place is the single wing one. There's never been a better group of friendly guys that are willing to share and not charge you a penny for their knowledge or their materials. Everything there is free. And I remember, like, my second year going up there, you know, you go up there and you bring money because you're thinking, maybe I'd buy some DVDs or something. And I remember John Mentier and Walt, they were up there. I can't pronounce Walt's last name, so I say Walt. But they were up there in front, and, like, they would just say, hey, who wants the Menominee three game from this year? And like 40 people raise their hand. They just start burning DVDs. They just hand them out. And this guy like, oh, my goodness. And so it was like, you can get so much information. But the thing is, I found out about the Conclave, you know, you may not go up there and get a ton of information from the speakers. You might. It depends how long you've been coaching. But what you do that's so valuable is you work, you meet guys and you get relationships, and then you're able to call up a guy and ask him questions and kind of, I hate to use this term because it's so corporate, but you can kind of network, you know, and you can meet guys and become friends and then share ideas. And it's very much, they talk about it being a single wing brotherhood, and it sounds kind of cheesy, but, you know, in football coaching circles, it's about the closest thing to a brotherhood I've seen, you know, because those guys are all very very much into running something that's about 100 years old and that no one's really wanting to do, you know, and it's so different, you know, that, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it, but I've been blessed that so many people have helped me out along the way, you know, so I'm certainly happy to try to help out other guys who want to get involved in it.
One thing, you lost a couple of players because you had to dismiss them last year, or there were injuries, which one?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, we lost both. Our starting tailback, you know, we dismissed him about game five. He's injured game two, but then after about five games, he just made some choices that wasn't going to help the team, so he had to go. And then our top receiver, he was injured for half the season, and he came back, and then we dismissed him over Thanksgiving break in the third round of playoffs, you know, because of bad choices he made. So, You know, playing at a public high school is not for everybody. You know, we don't get a lot of transfers in. You know, Orlando's notorious for having guys transfer in all these different schools, but we don't really get those guys. We get the guys that grew up wanting to be Blue Darters. So, you know, it's not hard. We have discipline with them. And, again, you know, we're giving chances, but if they do certain things, like we have a rule that you don't lie. You know, I've dismissed three players this spring for lying. You know, and it could be so simple. Like, I had a guy that told me he got into a nutcracker drill when he didn't. And he said, Coach, I was in that drill. And we all looked at each other, and I said, has anyone in this team gone against that young man in this drill? No one raised their hand. He lied. And so he was dismissed on the spot, turned in his stuff and left. So that's one thing we're not going to have is lying. So anyway, that goes back to the question of, you know, what are we trying to do here? Are we trying to win games, or are we trying to build men? You know, we're trying to build men, and we think that, you know, winning games will happen as a result of having good men. Of course, we have to have good players, too.
Yeah, you got to have that. The question I want to piggyback off of that is, how do you get your kids to trust you in your decision-making process as far as the missing people and not have, and knowing that you're doing things for the betterment of the team and not have that thing blow up on you? How did you get to that point?
Well, you know, there's a couple things. You know, it's not my first year at the school. You know, I've been there 12 years, and we've won a pretty good amount of games. And so they know that, you know, our staff knows what they're doing. The biggest key to the whole deal is I've got a phenomenal coaching staff. And it's a very unified staff. And so
if I say something to a young man that hurts his feelings, he's not going to be able to run over there to a position coach or another coach and get him to say, poor baby, and pat him on the back or something. You know, mm-hmm. whatever I say, the assistants are going to say the same thing. So that's kind of been good for us. You know, and again, we talk every day about these type of things. We talk about having unity and having integrity and having honor, being tough and unselfish. And, I mean, literally there's not a day that goes by that we don't talk about those things with our young men. So it's kind of ingrained in them.
So you start early with this process of letting the guys know what is expected of them, and knowing the rules and knowing what you can and cannot do. You start early with them.
We start with them when they're freshmen. Mm-hmm. We always have about 80 freshmen come out for football, and right now we've probably got 120 varsity and JV players. So when you add 80 freshmen to that mix, we'll have 200 boys playing football next August. And so our varsity coaches coach the freshman team just like we coach the varsity team. We practice all together. And so, you know, these freshmen come in and they get indoctrinated really quick into what we expect from them in the classroom and sitting in the front row and wearing a tie to school on Tuesday and saying yes, ma'am, and no, sir. And, you know, we let them know right away what we're about. And, you know, unfortunately, I'd say that every year, you can look at the two most talented freshman players, Leonard, and you can go ahead and scratch them off the list, because the two most talented freshman players, I think every year, have ended up cutting themselves, I guess you'd say, by the time spring comes around their freshman year, because they've been coddled through the Pop Warner system and told how great and special they are and that they can have shortcuts and stuff and they don't have to do what everyone else does. And when they get to us, that stuff just doesn't fly. And we expect our best mm-hmm. players to be our best people. And if you're a good player, we're going to be three times harder on you than we are on a backup player. So we treat the better players harder than we do the backups. Mm-hmm. So, but the good thing is we tell the young men in the middle schools, we say, now, if you're going to play for us, you're going to play for us as freshmen. We don't have a play in Pop Warner or other youth leagues as freshmen. We've never had that. So we tell them, if you choose that, you're choosing to play that over high school football. We're not gonna let you come out after that year. And so basically you're cutting yourself for 4 years if you play youth football as a freshman. And but the good news is our freshman football team hasn't lost a game in 8 years. And so they know that when they come to us, they're going to win, and we're going to give them good equipment. They're going to have nice uniforms, and there are going to be 80 of them, and they're going to win. And they're going to have success. But most importantly, you know, hopefully we're going to set the foundation for them academically to have success over the next 4 years, and as men.
You are the top dog in Central Florida by right now. Am I right?
Well, I don't really rank the dog. So, you know, I don't know. You're supposed to be the one doing the research, Scott. You have to be on the show.
You're the face of Apopka. You're the face of Central Florida. I mean, when it comes to football today, everybody looks at Rick Darlington. What kind of example do you...
That's not a pretty face. I can think of a lot more handsome or attractive people to be the face of anything than me.
What kind of example do you set for the program yourself? I mean, when everybody looks at Rick Darlington, they see that's Apopka. What are some of the things that you do to notice, to send example for your kids and for your community and everything? You being that high profile now.
That's the thing, though. I'm really not that high profile. I'm more reclusive than that. I don't live in Apopka. I live in a town called Eustis, which is about 20 minutes away. And when I go into Apopka, I'm going into coach or mow grass. That's all I do. I mow the fields. And so I don't really have the personality that such as I want to go into Publix and have a discussion on why we don't play more cover two. And mm-hmm. so I don't live there. You know, so I kind of hide out up in Lake County as it is. It's about 20 minutes away from Apopka. But as you were asking, as far as setting an example, we try to be good coaches in the school and you know, like I said, I've got a great staff of guys. You know, so hopefully we're going to be having a positive impact on our guys, on our young men, you know, saying good words to them. And, you know, I've always felt that as a coach, I'm kind of, I don't know if it's a philosophy, but I heard a comment one time I thought was really true. It says, if you treat people the way they are, that's where they'll be. But if you treat people the way that you'd like to see them become, that's what they'll become. And so it's kind of like, I tried that out on my sons. You know, my sons are, I mean, literally, it's probably common knowledge that I'm a phenomenal athlete, which that's a joke. I'm a terrible athlete. But I've got two sons that are playing Division I football, and their mom's probably better at me than I am. But what we did when we raised them is we just set the bar really high for them and said, here's the standard. And we treated them like they were already there. You know, we coached them like they were already there. And they kept on getting better and better. And you know, we put them in situations that they might not have been comfortable in, but we just treated them like, this is how you do it. This is what you are. These are your dreams. These are your goals. And, you know, so far they've both accomplished those goals. And so we try to do those type, same type things with our players. You know, we've had a lot of those recruiting analysts come out to practice because we've got a really good player. We've got two players on our team that can pretty much go wherever they want to go to college. But one in particular, I know ESPN's got him like the number one player in America, named Martez Ike. But if you were to come talk to Martez, say, yes, sir, no, sir, be very humble. He doesn't talk about college. He talks about Apopka. But, you know, if you come to watch our team, you would not leave there thinking, boy, there's all these Division I players. They are so talented. You know, you go out there and they'll go, you'd say, there's 120 kids out here, and there's only about a handful that would come and start for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that we're kind of one of those teams that we're maybe more than the sum of our parts because of the way we practice, the expectations. You know, I had a recruiting specialist guy, one of the top guys in the nation. He came to practice on Friday. So after practice, I asked him, I get in front of the team, I go, so are we different than the rest of the teams you see? And he goes, night and day. You know, he said he'd never seen so much contact. He'd never seen so much competition. He'd never seen so much enthusiasm. You know, and these are things we hang our hat on, which is kind of different. You know, and he said, if you practice like this in Texas, they'd all quit and go play basketball. And, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of take pride in that because we do things definitely differently. We're very old-fashioned. You know, we do things like they would do maybe back in the 50s as far as practicing and that kind of thing. So I think that, you know, we've had some success because we've had some good players, but maybe they believe they are great players. And when a good player believes he's a great player and plays like that, that's when you have great teams. And I think we've had some great teams.
You talk briefly about you. Do you have your airpiece on or something? I'm getting an echo from you when you
No, I can go. I was on speaker in my truck, but I can go back to normal.
Okay. You driving?
Yes, sir. I can switch it over. Let me figure this out. Let's see.
All right, is that better?
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not holding anything in your hand, are you?
I'm holding my phone.
Is that safe for you? I don't want a pocket to come after me.
Brother. I think
okay.
I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm out on a
date
with my wife. My wife and I always have a date on Sunday night, so I couldn't cancel my date for your show.
Oh, man, tell her I am so sorry. I need to get your
address.
She understands. All right, I don't want her jumping me. Okay.
But she doesn't mind. She's probably rolling her eyes at me.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to make this any more painful. You talked about your coaching staff, and you talked about your coaching staff, and I know you feel high. You know, you feel real good about them. What do you look for in an assistant coach?
Really, only two things. I'm looking for guys that are willing to work hard, and when we go to work, we go to work. They don't have an excuse. You know, they don't, well, I got to go do this or I got to go do that. You know, when we go to work, we go to work. And we're not one of those staff that beats all the time. We're not one of those staff that spends ridiculous hours. You know, we don't meet after practice. We don't meet before practice. We don't meet on weekends. Heck, I don't even know when we meet. I hate to meet. But when it's time to work the kids or be at practice or do whatever, I expect them to be there, and they all are. And then number two, I expect them to be I want them to want to make an impact in the lives of young men. You know, they're not doing it to win. They're not doing it as a hobby. They have a mission and a vision to impact young men's lives positively. And, you know, that's what I've got. I've got phenomenal guys, you know. And we've had so many great things happen in our program. You know, we do a mission trip in the summer. We go to the Bahamas. We have like 35 players and coaches go on a mission trip. And we go to FCA football camp every year. And I've just got a phenomenal group of people, you know, that believe in doing things the right way. So I'm excited about the guys I've got with me.
Well, that's great, Rick. Do you coach a position?
Well, I reckon I do. You could say I coach the I guess in the single wing, I kind of coach – sometimes I coach all of it. You know how that is. But because I played offensive line when I played, so I really know that area pretty well. But I've got a great offensive line coach. He played for us. He won a state championship for us as a player and won as a coach. So that's pretty special. But so I basically coach the backs, you know. But in team situations, what I want to do, my receiver coach on a play, I want him to coach the wide receiver, which is like split out 5 yards from our tackle, and the wing back. I want him to coach those two guys. And then I'm going to coach the fullback and the tailback because, they're both right there together. And then, you know, that might look at like me being a quarterback coach. That could be. But either one of those guys could throw in our offense, the fullback or the tailback could be the thrower. And then I've got a coach who's a blocking back coach. That's how important the blocking back is. I've got a guy that coaches one guy. He coaches the blocking back. And so that tells you how much that offense or that position in our offense means.
Did you find your blocking back this spring? I know you were crying about it.
I've been through nine of them. I've been through freaking nine of them. And
now, that
when
tells
I finally
that
thought
tells
I had two, I thought I had two. I had narrowed it down to two. And they both got concussions the same day. So it was like, we got to start over. So anyway, we're searching for the elusive blocking back.
Now that tells you that I do my homework, okay?
I know there was an article or something about that, but I never even saw it. I don't hardly read the paper, so I don't.
Yeah.
Someone said, I heard you're looking for a blocking back. Like, yeah, we are.
Okay.
But we're looking for lots of positions.
Okay, let's do some football talk here for a second. I believe, you know, this is my belief. I don't know if it's yours, but I believe the most important group in any kind of wing offense is the offensive line. Is that true in your case?
It is very true, but if we don't have good backs, we're not gonna go very far.
Right. Okay.
So I had to pick great backs or a great line, I don't know, but you got to have a great line. There's no doubt to win championships. And it definitely makes you go. And we've had some good ones. But, you know, the offensive linemen are things that are coached and built. Backs, they're pretty much natural. You know, if you've got to teach a back how to make a cut or make a guy miss, I mean, picture you or me teaching a running back how to make a move. That's just comical. And so running back is very instinctive and natural, whereas offensive line is not natural at all, you know,
right.
From the stance to the techniques and the things you do. And there's like a whole different language. I mean, it'd be funny because you understand this, but if a citizen were to come and sit in a film session with us and listen to the lingo and the terms we use when we're talking about, you know, a play on film, you know, like, okay, look, we had a five techniques. We got to thunder that. We got to ace the backside backer and trio the defensive tackle. You know, like what? Like no one would know what that was, what that meant. But our kids just shake their head like, yeah, coach, that's right. We got to trio it. And so you know, it's one of those things that offensive line's got their own language, and it's so technical, more so than any other position, probably in sports. I can't think of another, because where else in sports do five guys work together in sync and are so close to each other that they make calls to each other? You know, now you could say, well, in hockey there's five. Yeah, but they're not making calls. You know, if a guy gets the puck back up by his net, he's not making a call to the left wing. you know, about how we're going to set up a power play or whatever. You know, so I can't think of another position in football that has the communication of the offensive line. You know, it's very intricate, very important.
How do you develop your lines?
Well, obviously, the guys that play offensive line, I hate to say this, but you know it's true, are the guys that are probably not talented enough to play another position. You know, I mean, if a guy is able to run really good, he's probably going to play defensive line. And so the offensive line, nine times out of ten, they're kind of your leftover guys, you know. So the first thing you got to do is kind of give them some sort of unit pride and identity where they feel good about themselves. And then, you know, we develop them in the weight room. You know, I've got a great strength coach. We have a great off-season program. And we got a strong bunch of young men on our team. And so we try to get them strong in there. But then when we get out to football on May 1st, you know, we're going to go for 30 days in May, 20 practices, and we're gonna get them in the right position, teach them the system, and hammer at it, get better, and then come back and do it in the summer, and go to camp, and go to preseason. And, you know, it's a long time until we have to play for real, but that's good because we got a long way to go.
And your blocking rules are real simple for them to pick up and everything? Or do you
have
one of those?
I think they're simple, but, you know, I mean, someone might say that's complicated, whereas some people might think it's simple. You know, I think it's simple. I'll tell you this. I've run all kinds of different systems over my career, and I think what we do now is the simplest thing we've ever done. You know, with the unbalanced line, we've really made it a bunch of specialized guys, and they know their rule. They hold up no matter what front's up there, and if they hear the name of the play, they run that play, and the rules don't change much. So I think it's simple, but you know, that really depends your scheme of reference.
Do your ninth grades get the same treatment as your varsity play as far as the rules and everything? I mean,
yeah,
did they get started?
Yeah, they run the same thing.
Okay.
Our freshmen run five plays. They run the power, the sweep, counter, the ISO, and one pass. And we call it the magic pass because every time they throw it, it's a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And so our JV runs the same thing. Now, what the JV does is they run it no huddle, and they run it as fast as they can run it. And so our JV went undefeated this year, and our JV had awful talent. I mean, I'm telling you, they were not talented at all, but they went undefeated. And then our varsity, we do a little bit more in the varsity as far as we'll run the spin series. The JV and the freshman just run the power series, but the varsity, they'll run spin, they'll run power, we'll run some jet. You know, we might start messing with some T series, and so, you know, the common denominator is we're pretty much 100% unbalanced. You know, we mess with some balance stuff and some spread stuff in practice. And when Zach was playing, we did that stuff. But once Zach went out, we really didn't have the pieces to run that type of offense. And so we kind of reverted back to that, which is a balanced single wing.
Okay. Now, how do you get your personnel? What are you looking for as far as your offensive personnel? I mean, the fits and everything. I mean, what are you looking for in a tackle or a guard or whatever?
Right. All right, the outside tackle's our best lineman, without a doubt. He's got to be able to block on. He's got to be able to reach. He's got to be able to block down. He's got to be able to pull. He's our true best lineman. So if you've got one good guy for us, we play him an outside tackle. Our second best lineman, I would think, would probably be the strong guard because he's got to pull both ways, and he's got to pull pretty good distance. He's got to be able to hit moving targets in space. The third guy would probably be the quick guard. He's the funnel runner on power. You know, he traps, but he doesn't have to pull as far as a strong guard. The center, all he's got to do is deliver the ball accurately and block the A-gap. I mean, that's really it. I mean, either reach it or block back, but get the ball back there accurately. And we played with a center before that could not start for another school in America and, you know, won a lot of games with him. And if you can snap it accurately – and block the A-gap, you're good to go playing center for us. And then the one lineman that we can hide a place at is the inside tackle because 90% of the time he's blocking the guy in front of him. And so all he's got to do is just not get whipped. You know, we say get run over slowly. So the inside tackle is the guy we kind of hide. And then our tight end, they have a receiver and a tight end that are both about the same size. Last year they were both about 5'11", 175. And we like to shift a lot. And when we shift, the tight end goes to receiver and the receiver goes to tight end. So I like to have two generally the same body types there. And then the blocking back, he's the unsung hero of the whole deal. You know, he's got to be a guy that can is physical, loves contact, unsung hero. He's not going to touch the ball much, but he's the guy that makes us go without question. And then the wing back would be a guy that's kind of more of a home run hitter. He doesn't have to be the one-on-one blocker that you'd see in the wing tee. He doesn't have to block it in by himself ever. But he's kind of our home run hitter, small guy, can run some routes, that kind of thing. And then the fullback, you know, he's a combination guy. We've got a great one right now. He's going to go somewhere in the SEC. But he could be a guy that, you know, if he can run it, that's good. If he can throw it, that's good. But if he can only block, well, that'll work too. And then our tailback's kind of the guy. The tailback's the guy that gets a lot of the carries and can throw the ball some too. And like I said, last year our tailback was a guy we moved over from defense. He ended up rushing for 2,400 yards. So.
Okay. Well, that was a question that came into it. Someone wanted to ask and everything, so I said I'll get up and ask them exactly. Are you no huddle?
We are.
And what are you up tempo or you use different tempos in there?
I'm not smart enough to have too many different tempos. We just line up and call the play and run it. So no, we don't have like two or three different ones. You know, some people have more tempos than we have plays.
Oh man, your honesty is killing me over here.
We always seem to be yelling at him to get lined up. You know.
Okay.
But
do you get
tired.
A lot of? Are you getting a lot of plays off? Are you getting a lot of plays off for doing the game?
I thought we were, but the thing is, and again, don't take this the wrong way, but last year we had so much success that it seemed like, and again, I'm telling you, I'm not trying to be anything but humble on this because I'm sure it won't happen again, but we had so many times that we had a running clock in the second half that mm-hmm. we were just trying to get our twos in there and get them some reps. I mean, we had games that we only got our twos in like two series because we had a running clock the entire second half. Because in Florida, if you're up by 35, the clock runs. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had a good offensive team last year, and therefore we got a lot of running clocks. But I know that's unusual, and I know it won't happen again. I'm sure it will not happen this year. But we're trying to get a lot of plays off, you know. So, but that's because we don't have guys go both ways. You know, if I was in a school where we were all going both ways or something, I'd probably slow it down. You know, let them mm-hmm. rest. So, you know, we're just trying to go out there and run plays fast and maybe get more plays and let the defense not get lined up right.
I assume your playbook is rather thick. I mean, I think you got one of those 300-page playbooks and everything.
Oh, no, we don't have a playbook. My playbook is I have a little notebook that I carry around in the off season. And what I do is I always have it with me. It's in my pocket. And it's like if a coach, one of my coaches wants to see what I'm thinking, I'll just hand him my notebook and say, here, give me this back tomorrow. But the thing I do with it is funny is, so I draw up all these ideas in the off season, you know, and then I go back through it, like right before spring practice. And what I do is I highlight the plays I still think are good. You know, because you draw up a play in, let's just say, February, but then by May, you realize that's garbage, you know. And so I highlight the things I want to do. And so I go into spring practice with this long list of stuff we're going to do. And spring practice is kind of like my laboratory. You know, I get 20 practices to try whatever I want to do. And we'll do it. We run everything that I could think of. But what happens, Leonard, is by the time spring ends up, we're always back to the same five or six plays, you know, that we've always run and had success with, you know. And so there's no playbook. You know, we don't have a playbook, and because it might change like daily. I mean, I'm always tinkering with stuff to try to find a better way to do it.
Uh-huh.
And so if there was a playbook, I don't think that playbook would be it would fluctuate a lot. But we literally don't have anything on paper at all. I don't have the first play written down on paper.
I'm sitting over here. I'm laughing because there's some coach out there listening to you right now, and they said he got to be kidding.
No, I don't have no play.
Hedges man has broken the state record as far as scoring and yardage and everything, and he does it. It can't be this simple.
No, we run off tackle. I'm telling you, if you were to ask our kids, okay, what's the first play of the game? They're going to say six, and six is our power play, and they'll call it. That's it, six.
Now, see, a lot of people don't understand. See, I know you, Rick, and I know your system and everything, but a lot of people don't understand that you don't have to go in the huddle and call all these other things. You just say six and go. You know, let's run. Everybody knows exactly what you're saying.
It's six. Yeah, it's not like we're going to run trio, flop, to base, Z motion, six. It's just six. Six. What do you want to run? Let's run six. Hey, you want to run the other way? Let's go blue six. I just flipped the formation over the left and ran it to the left. Yeah, it's not very complicated, you know, and it's not a lot to it. I think if you're simple, you can be really good at the fundamentals. And the thing is, too, I know, is I want to be able to look out there and see how someone's trying to defend us and the mistakes we're making and be able to fix them. And if we get too multiple with different formations, this and that, that's a problem. So there's two things. If I don't know why a play is not working, that's a problem. And here's another problem is this. If I've got to hold something in my hand to call the play, that's a problem. Like, if you see me on the sideline with a play sheet, that means I'm clueless. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I should have it all in my head, you know. And so that's kind of where it is. And, you know, I learned a lesson, too, about playbooks. I played for a coach that was the Florida High School Coach of the Century, Bill Castle at Lakeland High School. I played for him, and I coached with him. And I remember I coached linebackers for him when I was young, and I had this linebacker handbook that I used to give my kids, and we'd quiz them on it and stuff. And so one day Coach Castle got a hold of my linebacker handbook, and he kind of chuckled, and he goes, stuff when I was young too. And I go, what do you mean? You know, because I was only like 26, 25 years old. And he goes, well, it's good to do that, but I found a couple of them laying around in kids' lockers. And so I go, screw that. I'm not doing that. That's a waste of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go, And so, again, if I give a guy a piece of paper, you know, it's going to be, you know, what good's that going to do? Is he going to go home and study it while he's texting his girlfriend? I don't think so. So you better learn it on the field, you know. It's like, here's an example, too. This spring, with all these blocking backs we've been trying out, what I did, I made a wristband, and it had the plays we had, and it had the blocking back's assignment on it. And so we're running a play, and the blocking back's doing the wrong thing, and I see him looking at his wristband. And two things I thought. Number one is you've got to look down the wristband. By the time we call the play and snap the ball, you don't have time to look and say, insert into the A or B gap and block the play side linebacker. I mean, you don't have time for that because we're going too fast. But number two is that thing changes, like, daily. Like I said, I change stuff all the time. And so I looked at this poor kid and I go, dude, that stuff's so out of date. Don't even bring that wristband out here anymore. And, you know, the wristband was good 2 days ago. But again, we're always trying to, you know, tweak things and make them better. So I just can't be sad. I can't leave well enough alone, as my mom would say.
Okay, well, like I say, I was sitting up here laughing because I know some coaches out there going, it can't be this simple. It just can't be.
Yeah.
How do you game plan for a game, and how do you prepare offensively for a game?
Here's what I do, Leonard. Ready? We're going to run darter six, and then we might run blue eight. And then we're going to run – maybe if we want to run our pass, we're going to pick the one pass. Because we only have one pass, so we're going to throw that pass. So that's the game plan. And you're going to say, that's so wrong. But here's the thing. Leonard, if you're a single-wing team, how can you possibly predict how an opponent will line up to you? You know, you may think they're going to line up in a 50. Will they line up in a 4-4? Or they're going to be a 3-3. Will they line up in a 5-3? You can't predict because you never see film of a team playing the single wing. You see what I'm saying? spread team, you see your opponent playing spread teams all the time. So you know if it's cover, if it's third down long, they're going to play this coverage and play run this blitz, and they like to play too high. That stuff's out the window for the single wing. It does not matter at all. And we played 15 games last year. Do you know how many games we were able to predict as a staff how the other team would line up to us? One time. The first round of the playoffs, we got it right because the team that we had played, we played the previous year in the playoffs. And so they lined up in a similar manner. And so we were able to prepare for that team. So what we do as far as game planning is this. We'll say, okay, if you're a 50 team, what are all the different ways you could run the 50 against our formation? And I say our formation because we usually run one formation. And so we'll line up all the different 50 ways. But then we still have to practice against the 4-3 and the 4-4 and the 3-3-2. So when we're out there during practice, I'll tell our scout squad coach, just run whatever you want. Line them up wherever you want to run them, and we'll run the play. Just give us a crazy defense. Mm-hmm. You can play 13 guys if you want. Just give us a different look every play. And that's kind of really how we game plan. So it's not very very complicated or detailed, but then at the same time, you know, we don't have to spend 75 hours over the weekend trying to figure out what blitz you're going to do on 3rd and 7 because we're not going to throw.
It's amazing how the most successful coaches I talk to keep this thing very, very, very simple. I mean, just as simple as they want to, you know, just simple.
Right.
How do you deal with troubled kids in your program? I mean, kids who just don't, the light bulb hadn't come on yet. You know it's there, but it just hasn't been there. Or who can consistently try to get in trouble. How do you deal with those kind of kids?
Well, when we first get them as ninth graders, you know, we kind of let them know the way things are. And we know the ninth graders are going to be stupid. They're going to make dumb mistakes. You know, I tell them all the time, freshmen are idiots. We expect you to be idiots, but you better not be an idiot for long. And then sophomores, you know, they make an occasional mistake, but they're not supposed to be problems. You know, sophomores need to be getting it by then. And then juniors, we expect no problems. And then seniors, we expect to solve problems. And so if a young man is still a problem going into his junior year, he's going to be released. I mean, there's just not too many ways around that. So the troubled kids, we're going to try to help them when they're freshmen to get right. But they need to get right, and they need to show that they're willing to make changes. If a young man is a troubled guy and we help him, punish him, discipline him, whatever, and he continues to make the same mistakes, I promise he won't be with us as a sophomore. It's just they just eliminate themselves from contention. And so it's like if they want to play football in a pocket, they're going to have to get right. Well, that's not to say that we get rid of guys on one mistake. You know, it might be 20 mistakes, but there's got to be improvement. They've got to grow up, and they can't, you know, keep on making the same mistakes their whole time here. You know, we expect them to grow up eventually.
When they get through their ninth grade year, they ought to be a different human being than they are when they got started. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you hope they understand what's going on now, you know, and we shouldn't have classroom behavior problems from sophomores. You know, 95% of our classroom behavior problems are from freshmen because they're just like little puppies. You know, they don't know how to act and they get all goofy. And, you know, we've got a thing we call the pit. It's a drainage ditch off our practice field. And freshmen who got goofy spend a lot of time in the pit. You know, we'll go down there and we'll counsel them on the error of their ways. And when it's 95 degrees in March,
I've seen the pit.
It's not a pretty place. You know, you tell them there's scorpions in there and rattlesnakes, and if it rains, there might be cobras or crocodiles. So, you know, we're still old-fashioned enough that we have a pit.
Yeah, I love it. I love every second of it. You off-season is probably one of the best 2 or 3 I have seen as far as intensity and results. Could you talk a little bit about that, I mean, without going into a whole lot of details about your off-season program?
Well, I've got a great strength coach. His name's Hunter Wood. He comes in 3 days a week, and then Coach Rolfe and my DC and I are in there every day with him. Got another coach named Mark Barrett who's in there most days with him. So on a good day, we have 4 coaches watching them, and
we have them in class. We have our offense fifth period, our defense seventh period, and our freshman sixth period. And so we're able to work them out during the school day, which is a great benefit to us. And so, you know, we start off in the winter working out 5 days a week, you know, upper body, lower body split. And then once we get to March, you know, or late February, we'll start working out 4 days and going outside 1 day. And when we go outside, we'll either do speed training or we'll do field agility work, sleds, you know, those kind of things on the field. And then when we get to April, we'll go a 3-2 split where we're 3 days in the weight room and then 2 days outside. And so we're trying to get in a little bit of shape. In the summer, you know, we don't work out that many days. We go 2 long days, 1 short day a week. But those long days are long days where they're getting about 2 hours of weights plus agilities and then conditioning after that. So our summer workouts take from 5 till dark. But, again, that's only 2 days a week. In the off-season, I'm talking about the time from January until May, the best thing we do is that on Mondays and Tuesdays, on Monday, we're going to lift very heavy with squats and cleans, meaning we're going to do sets of one. We might do 8 sets of 1 at 90%. And then on the last set, they have to do as many reps as they can. And you'd think they'd only get 1 or 2, but I've seen guys get 12 reps on squat with their 90%. And then their maxes go up a lot. And then on Tuesday, we do the same thing with bench. And then the second week, we might do 7 sets of 1 at 93%. And so our guys get used to handling heavy weight, not just on max day. They know that 1 day a week lower and 1 day a week upper, they're going to lift over 90% for a bunch of sets of one. And so, therefore, they're used to handling heavy weight. And so right now we've probably got 25 kids squatting over 400 parallel, and we've probably got 45 kids that can power clean over 225. And so I think our kids are strong, and I think it is in the way that we train them. And every day they come into that weight class, it's 4 coaches and whistles and hollering and intensity, and we're going to get after it. It's not going to be like, hey, here's the workout on the board. Y'all go there and get your sets. It's never been that way, not one day ever. There's never been a day. Now, what we do is during final exam week, okay, I take 1 day on finals week, and we go play softball. That's our one day off of the year. And what's funny is, Leonard, I mean, if I have 30 kids in the class, 3 have ever touched a softball. They don't know how to hold a bat. They don't know how to put on a glove. I mean, they're like the worst athletes you've ever seen. I had one time, we had a guy, he scoops up a grounder. My son, Zach, scoops up a grounder because he's played baseball his whole life. He throws the ball to first base. The first baseman's got a glove on, Leonard, right? He sees the ball coming at him. I guess it was coming too fast, so he literally threw down his glove and ran out of the way. The first baseman. And I'm thinking, my gosh, have we never grown up playing a sport? And so, but that's our fun day. We'll have one day a semester we're going to go play softball. But the other days of the week, we're going to get after it and work in the weight room.
Okay. I got to ask you this question here. You were at Valdosta High School for about 3 years.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it either.
Yeah, I know. And I believe the first time I met you was at a clinic in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I don't know if you remember that clinic you came down and did.
I remember I was sick as a dog. I was
yes, you were.
I promised to do that clinic, and I got the flu. And so I went up there. My wife was with me, and I spoke at the clinic. I remember talking at the clinic, but like as soon as my sessions were over, I went to my room, and I laid on the bed, and I remember, Leonard, I was sweating so much that my sweat pooled up in my ear. It was like a swimming pool in my ear of sweat. And I remember just feeling I was just so sick. I don't remember being that sick. So my wife says that's too much.
But I want everybody to know how gracious you were. I want everybody to know how gracious you were in sharing information then, because I asked you to send me, you know, a tape. And you asked me to give you a call when you got back, and I called you, and within a couple of days, that tape about what you were doing at Valdosta was on my desk. But I just want everybody to know that you are great at sharing information. I mean, you are super at it back then and now. But my question is, what was that experience like?
Well, it was not what I thought it was going to be. It's kind of like Friday Night Lights, you know. It's
a different place there. But I guess I was just not a good fit for them. You know, Valdosta is a great space, a very special place. They've had two coaches there that have won over 300 games apiece. And so, you know, they say don't ever follow a legend. Well, I was smart enough to follow two legends. And so I went in there, and I was maybe a little too forthright, a little too old-fashioned, whatever. And it just didn't work out good. You know, we won some games, and we were state runner-up 1 year and went deep in the playoffs the other two. But, you know, during my third year, they fired me. And I guess they said that I could stay, but they weren't going to pay me or let me coach anymore. So I had to go get another job. And so I did that. I came back to Apopka where I'd coached before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very thankful. You know, you don't often get to come back to a place. You know, I had been in Apopka,
right.
And I went to Valdosta. And, you know, I had to try it. I had to give it a shot. But when it did work out, I got to come back to Apopka, which was really great because I was just thankful they took me back, I guess you'd say.
Well, you know, sometimes the best thing happened to us out of adversity and everything, and you know. But I was always wondering how could you deal with all that intense, you know, that all that history there, and how was it to deal with it and everything?
Yeah, well, it was a great place, and again, I love the history. You know, Coach Hyder was one of my heroes, and I loved the Valdosta Wildcats. And from the time I was a head coach, I wanted my program to be like Valdosta's. And so I tried to model everything we did after Valdosta. So I loved it. It just didn't work out with the timing and the personalities and the powers that be. It all just, you know, just it wasn't quite, you know, what they wanted, I guess. So
you have had the privilege of coaching two of your sons successfully. How did you manage that and not blow up the team chemistry? Because a lot of guys don't handle that well.
Well, you know, the thing with Ty, you know, Ty was a lineman, so no one really cares who plays lineman. You know, if he started as a freshman, but no one hardly knew. You know, and he played on some good teams, and then he became a very good player and a great team leader. Now, Zach was a little different because, you know, I kind of forced him into the action as a freshman, and I think that, you know, talking to Ty about it now, that was Ty's junior year. You know, there were probably some guys that didn't like that. But, again, my thought was Zach, in certain situations, gave us the best chance to win. And so I'm going to try to win. And, you know, if a freshman's better than a senior, then the freshman's going to play. But, again, it was like I said earlier, I knew what Zach could do. I knew what he'd become. And so I put him in the mix, and I expect a certain standard from him. And he ended up being a great player and leading us to a state championship. And even when he missed his senior year, you know, he was a phenomenal leader, and our coaching staff voted him, you know, the Mr. Blue Darter Award or whatever you'd call it for our team, you know, that most represents our what we want in a player and a person. And the coaching staff picked that, not me. But, you know, I knew what my sons had inside of them because I'd raised them, and so I knew that they could be great. And so I put them in there, and they helped us have some great teams, you know. But I think that's one thing about coaches' sons that, you know, as a coach, as a dad, you know what your sons are built, you know, from. You know what they're inside. You know about what makes them tick. And so, you know, if Zach had played for another coach or if Ty had played for another coach, they might not have had the same opportunities because maybe another coach would have brought them along slower. But my thought was, hey, I know these guys can be great, and if they're great, our team's going to be great. You know, and the good thing about them was they are both very humble and very hardworking. So no one could ever say, well, coach's son is lazy. I mean, my sons are going to outwork everybody. They are very, very determined and had great work ethics. You know, I think Ty had that on his own, and then he taught it to Zach. You know, and then Zach's passed that debt down and showed other guys how to work. So they've been really great workers and humble guys and great team leaders. So I was very blessed to get to coach them, and looking forward to coaching my next two when they come through.
You, I read this somewhere that someone said that one of your most important strengths is an uncanny ability to get your team ready to play with intensity every week. Bruce, is that true?
I never thought about that, but I do expect them to play with intensity and play hard. And I think the biggest compliment you can get is as a coach is if someone were to say your team really plays hard, You know, that makes you feel really good. If someone says, hey, you've got a really talented team, I mean, that's got nothing to do with the coach, you know what I'm saying? And so if someone says my team plays hard, you know, if they have good fundamentals or they play with class or humility, those are things that we kind of have a hand in, and so that makes you proud and humble all at the same time. So I think it's a nice compliment. You know, it's hard to talk about yourself and what your strengths are as a coach. You know, you probably got to talk to people that play against you or something or coach with you. You know, because as a coach myself, I'm just trying to go to work every day and make our team better. You know, I don't really know how it happens every day. You know, I don't really have a formula. You know, just go to work every day, I reckon.
And like I said before, you are the godfather of Central Florida.
No, but that's not
you have
true.
Accomplished
that
a lot.
Really old. You know, I'm not that old, man. I'm not even 50. You know, there's no godfather in me. No, but I cannot agree with you on that.
Okay, okay. What keeps you doing this? I mean, why you keep coaching?
Well, I have to feed my family, and I don't know of anything else that I'd be happy doing. You know, I don't see myself as selling insurance or fixing coffee machines or something like that. I'm absolutely unmechanical, so that's out. So I guess coaching ball is about all I know how to do. You know, and never thought too much about college. That's just not really been my thing. I'm not saying I never do it, but it'd have to be the right guy. I'd have to go to the right place and go with someone that I believed in. You know, it wouldn't be just going to a school to go to a school. I'd have to go somewhere where I believed in the head coach and believed in his mission. You know, because I'm not 29. You know, I'm 49, and so you know it'd be a little harder for me just to jump into the college ranks. You know, there's not too many ladders out there I'm looking to climb. I just stay here on this ladder to pop and keep climbing this ladder.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one last thing, and I'm going to let you go on to your date.
No, date's
I've
over.
Known and – huh?
Date is over,
what'd
brother.
What'd you say?
Date is over. I don't know what kind of dates you go on, but mine don't last past nine. I mean, college can go out at 10 or something, but I'm home by 9.
Oh, God. I have known and interacted with you for years, and I always knew that there was something about you that was different. I knew that. I just can't figure it out, Dan. And then I got it, and I'm about to out you on that, okay?
I got it wrong, so you can shoot it.
But I got this documented. I got documented proof that you're one of the biggest prankster that ever was. Is that true?
No, that's not true at all. That's not true. So you got wrong documentation.
Well, you were a big prankster in college, weren't you?
Yeah, that was like half my life ago, brother. I've outgrown all that stuff. So, yeah, back in the day,
I bet
I
you
had
still got a little bit left.
Those days are gone. Yeah, if my players did half the stuff that I did, that they probably wouldn't be on the team. So I think I'm not the same coach as I was as a player. I was definitely kind of a goofball as a player.
Okay. I just fell over laughing when I read that. And the other thing I found out about it, you a big fan of the boss. Is that not true?
Yeah, I like Bruce Springsteen a lot. I've seen a lot of his tours.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I'm from New Jersey originally, and moved to Florida when I was 7. But I was I started liking him in high school, and I started watching. I'd go on to see concerts. He's great concerts. So starting like 1984, I've seen every concert that's come through the Southeast, and it's funny because. In 2012, we were 1-2, and I had set it up to get tickets to go see his last show in the Meadowlands, New Jersey, of the tour. And we lost the game that night, and I stayed up to school till 4:30 watching film. And then I went and slept for like 2 hours, and I got on a flight, and I flew to New York, and I drove to Giant Stadium, and I went to see the concert, and the concert was delayed by lightning, and I'm thinking they're going to cancel this thing. But they did. He started at 10:30. He played till 2:30 in the morning. He turned 63 at midnight, and it was just a phenomenal concert. And so went back to school the next day, you know, started watching film stuff, and we didn't lose again the rest of the year. And so we went from 1-2 to the state championship. And so I totally credit Bruce for that, the inspiration, you know. So, yeah, big Springsteen fan.
Well, Rick, I am so happy, man, that we got through this, and you didn't get your head chopped off. And I appreciate your time and everything, man. And I really do appreciate it because a lot of guys, you know, out there, they think that you got to be all complicated and everything to be successful. And I said, the simpler you keep it, the better off you are.
I think that's usually the way it works, I think.
Okay, well, thank you, Rick, and I'm going to bid you good night. And, again, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for being on the show, man. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me, Leonard. I'm very honored to be a part of it. Thank you again for all you've done.
Okay, man. Have a good night, okay?
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, man, that concludes the our show for tonight. You got to listen to Rick Darlington and what he believes in and what he does. And, you know, it's amazing. The simpler you keep this thing, the more successful you're going to be. Be tuned in for the next show. We have Coach Murphy from Montana. He'll be talking about the shotgun wing tee. I think it's Coach Tim Murphy. He'll be talking about the shotgun wing tee. Same time, same station. And thank you again for all the downloads you guys are doing. I mean, you're really blowing it up. And I appreciate it. And again, if you got any questions you want me to ask our guests, just go ahead and email it to me, and I get them out right away. So, till next week, have a good night, man. And like I always say, get somebody and hug them. Tell them you love them. Good night.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking. What a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.